From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon. Happy Friday to you. Welcome to this edition of Washington Watch. I am your Friday host, Jody Heiss. An honor to be with you, and we've got a lot coming your way today on Washington Watch. First of all, President Biden spoke last night at a press conference that was scheduled really as an attempt to stop the bleeding, literally, politically, as donors, Hollywood, the legacy media, and even members of his own party are calling for him to step down from his reelection bid. Well, howdy do.
What concerns do you have about Vice President Harris's ability to beat Donald Trump if she were at the top of the ticket?
Look, I wouldn't have picked Vice President Trump to be vice president, but I think she was not qualified to be president.
I wanted to ask you about your you mixed up presidents Zelensky and Putin earlier today.
And the Putin piece, I was talking about Putin, and I said, and now, at the very end, I said, here, I mean, Putin, I said, no, I'm sorry, Zelensky. And then I added five other names.
Wow, so difficult to follow. So Vice President Trump and Ukrainian President Putin, what a mess. Well, Texas Congressman Keith Self will be joining me with his thoughts on the president's performance, as well as what some of the president's answers last night actually reveal about his party's priorities. So you'll want to be sure to catch that here in just a moment. And speaking of senseless priorities, catch this. The Biden administration's Department of Health and Human Services is threatening, they are threatening to withhold medical funding from seniors, from vulnerable children, in states in particular that won't pay for gender procedures. Talk to me about trying to twist arms to advance a political agenda. Well, there's a coalition of states that have filed lawsuit against the HHS for this unlawful practice, and the leader of that coalition, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, will be joining me with an update a little bit later in the program. And fallout is continuing from a presentation at Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg, in North Carolina that identified pro-life organizations as terrorist organizations. While the statement has been issued saying that the slides in the presentation were not previously vetted and that future training products will certainly be reviewed, the question is whether or not this is becoming a pattern or actually has already become a pattern in the Biden administration. Well, I'll be talking with Missouri Congressman Mark Alford, who is a member of the House Armed Services Committee, about that a little bit later. And throughout this week, both Tony and I have discussed the GOP platform and its retreat from boldly defending life, but the streamlined 2024 platform is also a departure from the party's longstanding defense of the Second Amendment. It is likewise a departure from the GOP's commitment to Israel. Well, I'll be talking about these issues with Luis Valdez, who's a national spokesman for Gun Owners of America, as well as speaking with Rabbi Pesach Walicki, who is the executive director of Israel 365 Action. So we've got a lot coming your way. Before we get there, though, I've got to say this just to kind of set the stage of where we're going. And folks, please hear me on this. When it comes to the GOP 2024 platform, which we've been talking a lot about this week, I want to stress to you that this is a developing situation. In fact, it seems as though updates are coming in almost hourly on what's happening with this platform, and we want you to stay informed throughout the weekend. More than that, we need you to stay informed on this developing issue throughout the weekend. We need you to be able to be equipped to discuss this issue with your church family, with your friends, with your family, And we've got a couple of action items that we really need you to pay attention to, and if at all possible, to help us out with. First of all, you can add your name to a petition that calls for the RNC chair to lead the GOP to embrace life. To get a part of that, to become a part of that petition, you can go to frcaction.org/report, or you can simply text the word report to 67742. Secondly, we have talked a lot about the Platform Minority Report, and we want to encourage you to go to platformintegrityproject.com. That's platformintegrityproject.com. Or again, you can simply text the word platform to 67742. Here we are asking you to help urge your delegates from your state to sign the Platform Minority Report if they've not already done so. And I can pretty much tell you they probably have not done so. Very few of them are. So I'll repeat this again throughout the program, but please help us out with this thing. All right, we've got a lot coming your way. Our website, of course, tonyperkins.com. If you need to catch up on anything that you miss on this program, check it out there, tonyperkins.com. All right, let's jump into the issues of the day. As pressure continues to build from Democrats for President Biden to step down as his party's presumptive nominee for the 2024 election, the president gave a press conference yesterday. And by the way, this press conference was referred to as a big boy press conference by his staff. How did the president do making the case to his party elites and the American voters? And what did he reveal about his party's priorities? Well, joining me now is Congressman Keith Self. Among other committees, he is on the Foreign Affairs Committee as well as the Veterans Affairs Committee. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of the great state of Texas. Congressman Self, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to have you.
Thank you, Jody. Good to be here with you. You've got a big program today.
Oh, we got a lot to cover, and you're setting it all up. You're getting it going, and thank you for coming on. Give me overall your reaction to the president's performance yesterday.
Well, if it was a big conference, you would expect it to be as good as if that's as good as it gets. There is no wonder that the Democrats are in panic mode. Because these are not his enemies now telling him he needs to not run or even resign. These are his friends, and that tells you a lot. So watching this unfold, watching this basically implode, has been very interesting, because normally the Democrats, they are a herd. They're sheep that go along together. Well, that herd of sheep is the flock of sheep. Is fracturing. They're scattering now, and people don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, and you know, this whole press conference, it was not supposed to break news, if we can put it that way. It was supposed to be a press conference the intent of which was to stem the tide against his candidacy. In the whole thing, though, he spoke about the NATO summit that just concluded. What did you think about his assessment of NATO?
Well, I just returned from Germany about a week ago, and I will tell you, Donald Trump has made a tremendous move in NATO. We used to have 11, as little as a year ago, there were only 11. When Donald Trump started saying over a year ago that you need to step up, at the end of this year, we'll have 23. Now, Biden's taking credit for that, just as he's taking credit for his border executive order. But let's go back to NATO. NATO is in a quandary as well, because there are absolute specific requirements if someone's going to become a member of NATO. And I demand that the nations that want to become members of NATO meet the requirements. And frankly, the most important one is the sacrosanct Article 5. An attack on one is an attack on all. I don't see that happening now because they don't trust America. And I will tell you from firsthand conversations, they don't trust America today. And this goes back a long way in the Biden administration. It goes back to the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Since then, we've been having this problem. So NATO today is stronger in terms of people ponying up to the 2% that they've made a commitment to. But it's also fractured. Take Turkey, for instance. Turkey looks like it is no longer the anchor of that southeastern corner of NATO. So NATO's got its challenges. They need strong American leadership in NATO. And I will tell you from firsthand conversations, they're not sure they have it.
Yeah, great, great comments. And going back to the Afghan withdrawal, I think that's where so much of the problem started, with a lack of trust in this administration, and unfortunately with a lack of trust in America as a whole. And that is a very frightening circumstance, and certainly one that's coming back to us right now. I think it's also worth noting that when asked about the qualifications, everyone's talking about him stepping down. When asked about the qualifications of Vice President Kamala Harris, of course, he messed up. He referred to Vice President Trump. But when it came to listing her qualifications, all he had to mention was abortion. Let me play this clip three for me, and I'd like to get your reaction.
What is it about her attributes and her accomplishments over the last 4 years that make her ready to serve on day one if necessary?
First of all, the way she's handled the issue of freedom of women's bodies to have control over their bodies. Secondly, her ability to handle almost any issue on the board.
Okay. All right. Well, your reaction to that?
I'm not sure why he brought up abortion. That's pandering to a very small group of his base. But why didn't he mention that she is the border czar? They've done nothing on the border. 11 million people plus come across the border. They've done nothing on the border. I'm not even sure she's visited, except she might have visited once kind of tangentially near the border.
She got close.
But why didn't he mention that? She's been supposedly the border czar. So there are no qualifications, and everybody knows that. She was not chosen to be vice president because of her qualifications. She was chosen because of the DEI requirements under the Biden administration.
Wow. Well, yeah, it was also interesting to me that he claimed just, a couple of weeks ago that he knows how to tell the truth. But when you put the fact checkers to work on what he had to say, again, there's some enormous problems. Play clip four for me.
So I took executive action last month. As a consequence, working with Mexico, border encounters have gone down over 50%. The current level is lower today than when Trump left office.
Wow. All right, Congressman, let me just put this in here. We've only got less than a minute, so that one speaks for itself. But you guys are on recess. You're coming back after the RNC convention. Where are appropriations going to be, the appropriations bills?
Well, the Ledge Branch appropriations bill just failed this week, and we've got the tough ones ahead of us. I'm not sure that we're not looking right down the barrel of another omnibus or a couple of minibuses late in the year. Because, frankly, there is no appetite, there's no will in Congress to start dealing with our $34 trillion, $35 trillion dollars in debt. Wow. We'll spend money on anything. And I'm very concerned that we're staring down the barrel, because when this thing breaks, it tends to break fast. So
leave it
as I say, the smallest Ledge Branch, where we could have taken a leadership position to say we're going to start with ourselves, we did not, and it failed.
Got to leave it there. Congressman Keith Self, always great to have you. Friends, stay tuned. Much more Washington Watch coming your way right after the break.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This 3-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. An honor to have you on board with us today. All right, there is a 7-state coalition that's being led by Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, and they have filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration's Department of Health and Human Services for its rule that both forces healthcare providers to perform harmful gender transition intervention procedures, but it also requires states to pay for these procedures. So it's all on the back of taxpayers. And according to the Biden administration, failure to comply with this rule could lead to states having their access to federally funded programs like Medicare, like Medicaid, like children's health insurance programs, having these things eliminated. Well, joining me now to discuss this lawsuit is Missouri Attorney General, who is leading the way, Andrew Bailey. Attorney General Bailey, welcome back to the program. Always an honor to have you. All right, well, tell us about the Biden administration's rule.
This is the nadir of depravity from the Biden administration, forcing this radical transgender ideology in the form of dangerous, irreparable procedures on innocent children, and forcing doctors to perform those surgeries at taxpayer expense. The fount of legal authority that the president points to is Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, but that provision provides no textual basis for the rule that the president has promulgated. And what we know is that post-Chevron, the courts are going to give no deference to an agency's interpretation of statutes. That's the court's job. And so if it's not present in the text of the statute, then the agency isn't authorized to do it. This is offensive not only to Missourians, but it's offensive to healthcare providers who would be forced to provide and perform these procedures against their own convictions and beliefs. So we filed suit. We've filed in the Eastern District of Missouri. Proud to be leading a coalition to put a stop to it and protect children.
Well, as we so often say to you when you're on this program, thank you for your leadership on this and so many other issues. But yeah, when this is a rule that literally is compelling people to perform these surgeries, when they know these surgeries are harmful, that they result in permanent damage, it's stunning that the administration would be forcing this kind of thing. What does this tell us about how the LGBT ideology really controls this administration?
Well, it's permeated every aspect of the Biden bureaucratic state, the alphabet soup of federal administrative agencies for which there's no sanction in the United States Constitution, by the way. But what President Biden can't get passed through Congress because the people's elected representatives would never stand for it, he is in trying to institute through the flick of a pen, and he's using these bureaucratic agencies to do it. But at the end of the day, what it is woke ideology and experimentation ahead of the health and safety of children. And that's the policy priority of this administration. But, you know, one of the major under kind of emphasized parts of this is its violation of the anti-commandeering doctrine of the 10th Amendment. Not only is this a terrible, morally abhorrent policy position, but it's the federal government hijacking the apparatus of state and holding all healthcare hostage if the state doesn't comply and get in line with this kind of radical woke left-wing experimentation on children.
Yeah, and let's go further into that. When you talk about them holding this healthcare hostage, I mean, literally, they are willing to cut off health insurance to vulnerable children, to low-income individuals, to seniors. Is this for real? Are they literally, the threat is there, but are they literally willing to cut off health insurance and cut off these programs just to advance their radical agenda?
Well, they certainly have been willing to do so in other contexts. Again, this is not the first time the Biden administration has weighed into this issue. They tried to use the USDA to hold hostage the kids' free and reduced lunch programs in schools if schools didn't adopt radical transgender ideology policies. They've certainly upended Title IX and said that public universities and schools will not receive funding for women's sports if they don't allow men into women's restrooms. And now they've taken one step further and reached the logical conclusion, which is actually the destruction of life through permanent alteration, dangerous cross-sex hormones and puberty blockers, lethal chemicals that have forever changed the human body, and irreversible surgeries to deny children the ability to enjoy the full spectrum of adulthood. You know, at the end of the day, how dare anyone tell these kids God put them in the wrong body? We know he doesn't make mistakes. It certainly is morally abhorrent and violates the basic tenets of our constitutional structure.
It sounds like what you were just going through, a whole litany of examples, that this is yet again another broader example of a pattern from the Biden administration to push, to threaten, to bully their administration on the American people. Is that yet again what we're seeing here?
Yeah, but pardon me, Jody, but yeah, you're exactly right. This is a pattern of behavior from the Biden administration, but it's escalated. You know, we were talking about free and reduced school lunches and how they were going to hold those hostage and deny kids access to lunch food in schools. Then we were talking about bathrooms, and that's a public safety issue. And now we're talking about actual surgeries and administration of harmful chemicals. So this is an escalation in Biden's war on children and on basic gender ideology in favor of, again, woke left-wing experimentation. And I'm not going to let him put the health and safety of Missouri children at risk.
Well, it's certainly an attack on children. It's an attack on health care. It's an attack on the American system. It's an attack on the rule of law. And we had a federal judge that's already issued a preliminary injunction last week against the rule in a separate case. Tell me about that. Where does this stand, and where is all of this headed? Where's it? What's next?
Well, I think so much of this is going to have to be resolved by the United States Supreme Court. So there is, you know, a ruling out of a district court elsewhere that we're going to use to try to persuade the judge in our case to apply the same injunction. But, you know, the problem is this is a lawless administration. He's told no by the judiciary, and then he does what he wants anyway. I mean, look at the student loan cancellation plan that President Biden put forward. We defeated him on that plan back in 2023, and yet he said he doesn't care. He's going to do Plan B. We've defeated him on Plan B. And yet President Biden takes to the stump and brags about his willful defiance of the United States Supreme Court. So when you talk about undermining the rule of law, this is absolutely a constitutional crisis of the president's own making.
Wow. It's just unbelievable. It seems like 1 week after another, one issue after another, we have a continual lawlessness that is being forced down our throats. Thank you so much, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Always an honor to have you on the program. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you, Jody.
All right, friends, more fallout from a presentation at Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg, that puts pro-life organizations in the camp of being terrorist groups. Phenomenal. that we're even talking about this kind of things. Well, Congressman Mark Alford will be joining me to discuss this right after the break, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back in a moment.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Well, thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm your Friday host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you with us. All right, as Tony discussed briefly yesterday, there's a photo circulating on social media platform X. It came out this week, and it reveals that a presentation that we used for training at Fort Liberty, which is a U.S. Army base in North Carolina, but it referred to pro-life groups as terrorist organizations. For those of you viewing, we've got a photo of that up here. For those of you who are listening right now, we've got this photo. You can probably find it online. But the presentation listed several pro-life groups, including the National Right to Life and Operation Rescue. They also referred to opponents of Roe. Roe, by the way, they spelled R-O-W. But opponents of Roe v. Wade are also terrorists. Well, after getting caught, Fort Liberty responded on Facebook claiming that the presentation does not reflect the views of Fort Liberty. But if this training does not reflect the views of the Biden administration as it relates specifically to the military, then why do incidents like this keep happening? That's an extremely important question. And joining me now to discuss this and more is Congressman Mark Alford. He serves on the great House Armed Services Committee. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Missouri. Congressman Alford, always great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Congressman. Good to be with you.
Well, listen, what was your reaction when you learned about this incident at Fort Liberty?
Well, first off, just to catch folks up, Fort Liberty is the new woke name for Fort Bragg. Of course, several years ago, they started changing the names because the people who these bases were named after weren't perfect human beings. But anyway, I continue to call it Fort Bragg. I think this was a disgusting move. I think it is a symptom of the sickness within our military service right now. Not everyone, of course, but this is the woke ideology that the Biden administration and before that the Obama administration has instilled in the young men and women, and coming down from our generals to get people to be more progressive Democrat way of thinking. I think it's disgusting. I think the Armed Services Committee is going to take a good, strong look at this. Yes, they have changed this because of the public pressure. But look, when you equate a terrorist group like Hamas to a great group like the National Right to Life and Operation Rescue, one group, Hamas, that literally cut babies out of the wombs of women and burned them alive on October 7th. And then another group that's actually trying to save babies being cut from the womb. How can you call both the same name? I think it's wrong. It's immoral.
Yeah, ask the baby which one's a terrorist, for sure. We were talking a little bit in the previous segment about how this administration seems to have patterns of wrong behavior, wrong decisions, lawlessness, a host of things that we could fill in the gap. Is this yet another pattern with the Biden administration's military?
Well, I think it is. We've seen this. Look, Jody, I'm a freshman congressman. As you know, I've only been on the Armed Services Committee for about 18 months. We were honored to have Chairman Rogers here in our district yesterday, touring Whiteman Air Force Base, home of the B-2 stealth bomber, soon to be home of the B-21. And look, we are concentrating on being a strong deterrent against communist China and the bully that Xi Jinping is and the craziness from Putin, all brought up about because of the weakness of Joe Biden on the world stage. We have got to concentrate on the existential threats facing America right now. And those are our national debt and those two bullies, along with the Iranian mullahs, who want to kill us and who want to kill Israel, wipe it off the face of the earth. And so when we when the military concentrates on things like trying to call right-to-life groups terrorists, we've got a real problem.
What do you think the Armed Services Committee is going to do about this? You referenced that just a moment ago. Are we going to see some oversight, some hearings, some investigations, hopefully some consequences to this type of thing? Where do you see Armed Services going with this?
Well, I'm going to be talking to Chairman Rogers about this in the appropriate subcommittee to get a hearing on this, to call the commander of that base up to Washington, D.C. to answer some questions. How does this happen? Look, mistakes happen. People down the food chain tend to follow their own way sometime. But in order to solve a problem, we have to find out what went wrong in that chain and fix that link, remove that link or fix that link so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. And, you know, that is kind of the general thing. We have something like this breakout. We have a whistleblower. Somebody comes forward. They talk about this happened. Then we have in this case, Fort Bragg, Fort Liberty said, oh, well, this is not that doesn't reflect our opinion. And yet it happens again. It happens again and again and again. I think it's appropriate to have some sort of oversight over this. It's time to stop this type of thing from happening again and again, not just telling us, oh, we're going to stop it. It ultimately continues going on. And at the end of the day, would you not agree with it? At the end of the day, what it's going to take to change all this is a new commander-in-chief. Isn't that kind of the issue?
It's going to take Donald J. Trump being back behind that resolute desk, being the resolute leader that America and the world needs, to knock some heads, to get the generals to start acting like generals and not politicians, and to get some sanity back in the DOD.
That would be a breath of fresh air. Congressman Mark Alford, always great to have you. Thanks for the incredible job you do, and thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thank you. God bless, Jody.
Likewise. All right, coming up after the break, it's been widely reported, as we've talked about, the new GOP platform does retreat from defense of the unborn, but there are other areas of great concern as well. For instance, the Second Amendment. We've defended that for a long time, the GOP has. No longer, not a word. Also, our defense of Israel. Where did that go? We'll discuss it all right after the break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you with us today. All right, throughout this week, we've been discussing the GOP platform and, in particular, its retreat from protecting the sanctity of life. But in reality, that's not the only issue where the new streamlined platform has disappointed party stalwarts. For example, the Second Amendment, and those who are advocates for the Second Amendment, cannot help but notice that this 2024 platform is wholly muted, completely muted, in terms of gun rights. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Luis Valdez. He's a national spokesman and the Florida State Director for Gun Owners of America. Luis, welcome to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Well, listen, you actually wrote about the GOP platform. You said that it's gutted one of the core tenets that, in essence, has made Republicans Republicans. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, it's very simple. If you look back at the previous party platform from 2016, which they continued going on into 2020, it had a three-paragraph, concise but rich in detail statement on where the party stood on the Second Amendment. It clearly stated that they will defend the Second Amendment, that the importance of judicial appointments to the courts on how that could defend the Second Amendment. It brought up Supreme Court precedents with numerous cases that we've won in the past, such as McDonald and Heller. It also even brought up the fact that you had a number of jurisdictions like New York and California who were openly violating those rulings by the Supreme Court, like with what's going on in New York right now, declaring gun-free zones, and California trying to do the same. It even brought up the fact that you had harassment against both dealers and manufacturers by the regulatory agencies like ATF. And it even went a step further into saying that assault weapons ban, magazine capacity bans, laws targeting the AR-15 are unconstitutional. And it even promoted permitless and constitutional carry and congratulated the states that were passing it. Well, the current 2024 platform has stripped all that and just has a simple, oh, we'll protect the right to keep and bear arms. It pays basic lip service. And even unlike everything else in the preamble, It doesn't even go into detail on what protecting the Second Amendment is. It's quite scary and quite dangerous on what we're seeing, because this isn't the only thing that they basically gutted. I mean, if you look at fiscal and social issues, they've done the same thing. And as a gun owner who came of age in the 1990s, looking at what the Republican Party platform is of today, it reminds me of 1990s era Democrats.
That's a good point. You know, really, this is, and this, you are underscoring the importance of a platform. A party platform, not a candidate platform or a document, which quite frankly is more what this reads as than it does a party platform. But a party platform puts forth solid principles. It tells the voters where, in this case, the Republican Party stands on various issues, and specific to you, on the Second Amendment, which is clearly, it is our Second Amendment of the Constitution. And these type of statements, these documents, these declarations, not only have an influence with the elected officials in Washington, D.C., but it communicates to across the board, the judges, but also, the voters, I should say, but it also goes down to the local level, to the state level. It tells members of the Republican Party in the state and local levels as well that the Second Amendment is a priority. Isn't that correct?
Very much so. It's actually a very useful political tool for Second Amendment activists and patriots. Here in Florida, for example, under a Republican supermajority state for over two decades now, it took years and years and years of hard work of browbeating supposed pro-gun Republicans to advance permitless carry. The previous two legislative leaderships blocked permitless carry from advancing, and I used the 2016 and 2020 platform as a political cudgel to literally beat it into their heads and say, look, the National Party says constitutional carry is a party platform. If you as a state lawmaker aren't advancing this legislation as a Republican, then you are not a member of the Republican Party. You're literally going against the very core principles of the Republican Party. And we use that as a tool to get county level parties to pass resolutions and to even get the state level party to pass a resolution supporting it. And finally, last year, Gun Owners of America got Florida to pass permitless carry in the state. And it was the same tool that was used in Texas and South Carolina. But it's also another tool that we could use to go after anti-gun Republicans, like what you just saw in Wyoming. You had the Republican governor there veto pro-gun legislation that would have repealed numerous gun-free zones. But now, since the party platform is so vague, it doesn't give patriots a tool to go after the governor and say, what the heck was this? Now the governor could say, well, I'm still protecting the right to keep and bear arms. It gives coverage now to weak-willed, spiny, squishy Republicans.
Yeah, so let me just, last question. You basically have hit this, but I just want to clarify a question and let you hit on it one final time. We all know where the Democrats stand on the Second Amendment. No question about that. And this party platform is so weak in declaring where Republicans are. So how disappointed are you, even if that's the right word to use, that Republicans have failed to offer a contrast on this issue between Republicans and Democrats?
Well, sadly, dealing with the Republican establishment and the Republican political machine, this isn't the first time that GOA has had to deal with something like this. And this isn't the last time we're going to deal with it. And that's the difference. And that's what separates us between other organizations, is our product speaks for itself. We fully operate off the principle of confrontational politics, which is we're not going to kiss their butts. We're not going to stroke their egos. We're going to hold them accountable. We are going to hold their feet to the fire. And we will be unrelenting in pushing the issue. They campaign. They claim they're pro-gun. Fine. Actions will speak louder than words, and we will hold them accountable. Because as we've already seen with the previous Republican establishment and the previous Republican administration, there have already been weak need. In Florida, they passed the Parkland bill. And with the presidency of Trump, you know, he pushed an executive order to outlaw bump stocks, which the U.S. Supreme Court has already declared is unconstitutional. is you had a Republican Senate say they wouldn't advance gun control. So we know where we stand on this, and we are going to press forward, and we are going to press the issue and make sure that no matter what the platform is, the Second Amendment is protected, no more, no less.
Thank you so much, Luis Valdez from Gun Owners of America. I appreciate your lead on this, and thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, before continuing the conversation on the GOP platform for 2024, I want to remind you one more time of what we're doing here at FRC and FRC Action. As I shared a little bit earlier in the program, this is a developing situation, and it is going to continue developing throughout the week, throughout the weekend, and we want you to stay informed. We want you to know where this issue is, and so we've got a couple of places that I encourage you to get involved and to stay informed. I want to encourage you, first of all, to visit frcaction.org/report, or you can simply text the word report to 67742. And then also, we are urging you to put a little pressure, in fact, put a lot of pressure on your state delegates to sign the platform minority report. You can get more information about that by going to platformintegrityproject.com or simply text the word platform to 67742. And in advance, thank you for staying involved and helping us with this. All this is going to happen next week, like Monday, at the convention. And so we need to be engaged now and over the weekend. All right, as we are talking about this GOP platform, how they've disarmed the Second Amendment, how they've taken away so many protections for life, but it doesn't end there. Another major issue that is greatly lacking is support for Israel. Especially is that important now that our closest ally in the Middle East wages a war for its very existence. Well, joining me now to discuss this is Rabbi Pesach Walicki. He's the executive director of Israel 365 Action. Rabbi Walicki, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
All right, so the 2024 GOP platform includes just a single line regarding support for Israel. Your reaction to this?
Yeah, you know, listening to Lewis, it's the same story on the Israel side. This platform has one line that says we will stand with Israel and seek peace in the Middle East. And if you compare it to the old platform included within it, you know, of course, the old platform was written in 2016 and readopted in 2020. It spoke openly about limiting the influence of Iran, of pulling out of the Iran deal, of sanctioning Iran, which, of course, Trump did. Those sanctions led to an almost bankrupt Iranian regime and Hamas and Hezbollah not being funded. And that actually brought peace to the Middle East. The Abraham Accords actually brought peace to the Middle East. The destruction of ISIS, which is also mentioned in that platform, the will to destroy the enemies and to support Israel as an ally. And most notably, in the old platform, it specifically said that they will pursue a policy where there is no daylight. That's the expression used, no daylight between the U.S. and Israel. And what that means is that Israel would be treated as an actual ally, trusting your ally and seeking the best interests of your friends while punishing your enemies. And to just have this mealy-mouthed, vague term, we will stand with Israel. Look, Democrats also say, you know, that they stand with Israel. Joe Biden says he stands with Israel, even as he withholds weapons and pressures Israel to take steps that will cause it to lose the war. What I'm hearing and what I'm worried about is that the Trump administration has some fantasy that they're going to lure in Muslim voters in America who maybe aren't so happy with the Democrats, as we're starting to hear, mumblings of, and that they're trying to be really vague about this and say that they'll stand with Israel and seek peace in the Middle East. And when people talk about seeking peace in the Middle East, and that phrase didn't appear in the old platform, it sounds like a nice thing. We all want peace. And of course, as I just said, Trump's policies of strength, of punishing the enemies, of knocking off Soleimani, wiping out ISIS, sanctioning Iran, moving the embassy to Jerusalem, supporting your friends and weakening your enemies. That's what actually brings peace. But just to say we're going to seek peace, unfortunately, that's been a buzzword over the last few decades for negotiations and capitulation and appeasement. And it's very worrisome. It looks like they're leaving all their options open. And, you know, just like as what's been said about gun control and about life, it looks like they're trying to be all things to all people and possibly stepping away from full support for Israel.
Yeah, it's very, very disturbing. And many of these people, when they talk about peace in the region, they're talking as two-state solution, which absolutely will never provide peace as well. What are you hearing, Rabbi, from other American Jews who perhaps want to support the GOP and former President Trump, but now with this platform, I mean, it's let them down. What are you hearing?
Look, it's still an absolute necessity that we support President Trump. We need him back in office. As far as I'm concerned, I have two sons and a son-in-law who've spent most of their time fighting in Gaza since October 7th. And as you said, I lead Israel 365 Action, and Israel 365 Action really birthed the Keep God's Land Coalition that Family Research Council has been so cooperative with, you know, defending Israel. And we know that we need Donald Trump to win this election because the Democrats are really in bed with our enemies. So Jews who want to support Donald Trump are still supporting Donald Trump, but that doesn't mean that we are worried. Let's remember that Donald Trump projected, but his deal of the century essentially was leading to a two-state solution as well. So it's not like we're out of the woods, even if we go back to the old Trump policies. So while we're disappointed, I think this is true. Look, I'm not a Christian, so I can't speak for Christians, but I think that even with our disappointments of the platform, it's not like we have another party that's going to be better that we need to vote for. We still have to get behind President Trump and get him elected. But it's just worrisome in terms of what direction the policies are going to take.
Yeah, I would say that there was, just in hearing you talk there, there was a statement in there. I think it was more on the domestic level and the riots in the schools, the universities. But it did say that they're going to deport pro-Hamas radicals and make our college campuses safe and patriotic again. So that certainly leads a little bit in the right direction as well. Last question, and we've only got about a minute left. We have the Democratic Party platform coming up later this summer. What are you expecting there?
What am I expecting there? On Israel,
as it relates to Israel, yeah.
I'm expecting an overt call for a two-state solution that the vast majority of Israelis are opposed to. Even after October 7th, Israelis who used to be in favor of a two-state solution are opposed to it. Upwards of 75 to 80% of Jewish Israelis are dead set against it right now. It's a frustration to the Biden administration, but I fully expect, considering their statements about a two-state solution, that they will absolutely call for it. They're going to try they're probably going to mention a Palestinian state. Let's remember, the Biden administration has Palestinian activists, people who, like Maher Bitar, who's one of the senior advisors on national security and intelligence to the president, is a Palestinian activist in their administration. Yeah, I expect it to be a very anti-Israel platform. And frankly, I have to tell you,
our time is running out. I've got to leave. All right. Thank you so much, Rabbi. Folks, remember, please go to the websites and text what I gave you earlier. This is a critical weekend. Be engaged. Be involved. Thank you for joining us this week on Washington Watch. Have a great weekend.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.